So about 3 weeks ago, during the Jewish High Holy Days, I was sitting in temple, observing the Jewish High Holy Days. Now, sometimes the issue comes up, what is a Unitarian Universalist minister doing sitting in a temple? And it's a good question, because we can all ask, what's a Unitarian Universalist congregation doing sitting in a temple? The temple that I was sitting in fact, was housed in the Unitarian Church in Studio City that I served once upon a time, and the rabbi was my old rabbi and friend now of over 35 years. And so part of it is out of affinity, part of it is, as Tevye says, tradition. Somebody was ahead of me on that one. And part of it is, when I'm at church, I'm working. I have the same needs everybody in the room has, to have a quiet time, a contemplative time, a time for worship, and a time to get lost and to drift off into various spaces during the sermon. You can drift off into various spaces during the sermon. That's part of the religious experience. I try to provide long and boring enough sermons to give you that opportunity to be obfuscated, but I better not drift off into those spaces when I'm doing the sermon. So it's a pleasure to be part of a worship community and to receive and to do the same business that everybody else gets to do. It's also very fulfilling for me to get other points of view and to have that wonderful mix of stories and images and other styles of worship. And during the Jewish High Holy Days, people are asked directly to do a frank and fearless inventory of our lives, of ourselves, of our doubts, of our faith, of all of those ways that we relate both to the world out there and to our values in here. And that is a valuable experience for me. And as I was being challenged by my old rabbi to go deep and not simply drift along with the entertainment values, it is not surprising that when I question my various faiths, my faith, the Emily Dickinson line was wonderful, my faith in humanity, my faith in progress, my faith in reason, my faith in just the universe and existence, that when I'm asking these questions, that Mother Teresa would drift into my meditations. As I'm sure all of you know, Mother Teresa recently, post-mortem, raised quite a controversy on her way to sainthood when some of her private letters were revealed. And it turns out that she had doubts. She might be a saint, but she did not feel, with it, in her language, the presence of God constantly in her life. That she had despair. That she felt that ultimate loneliness of being cut off from those things that she believed gave her life, her existence, her mission, meaning. And people were immediately stunned and shocked. How could Mother Teresa, of all people, question the reality of God? How could she not feel the presence of Jesus in her life within the system of her faith? How, if a saint can't be connected with that source of the divine, if a saint is cut off, if a potential saint falls into despair, well, maybe her entire life was just a pious fraud, and that's all she was. Well, let me break the rule of sermonizing and jump to the end. No, that doesn't mean that she was a pious fraud. It means that she was faithfully engaged with the source of meaning in her life. Faith is not unquestioning assumptions and false certainties. It is faithfulness in a relationship. And whether you understand that relationship as the theological essentialist does, as with God, or as the existentialist does with meaning, however you understand it, that that's a faithful relationship of engagement. It isn't constant. We don't always feel the same way in every moment, in a relationship, in a community, and in life. There are moments of joy and despair, of feeling connected, of feeling filled, and of feeling just empty and lost and rudderless. Well, while I'm contemplating Mother Teresa and her truly essentialist and existentialist doubts and angst and anxiety and despair, the rabbi tells the story of the Rebbe of Lublin, a Rebbe who was the rabbi of a Hasidic group. Now, Hasidic Judaism is often involved in great ecstatic celebrations. It looks for the good stuff in life to celebrate. It looks to sing and to dance and to have not faith as belief, but faith as experience of the transcendent that you can get through chanting, through singing, through meditation, through dancing. And they try, even in the world of 17th and 18th century Poland, which was not all that great, to find those things that were worthy of celebrating. They understood that there will always be pain and sorrow. There will always be funerals and loss and memorial services, but there will also be singing and dancing. There will be births and weddings and festivals and celebrations. And part of that tradition is you never cancel a wedding for a funeral. You go to the funeral and you go on with the wedding, because there will always be pain. There will always be the sorrow of separation. But you have to grab at the song to sing when you can. You have to take and get up and dance when you can dance. It's a very kind of ecstatic form of worship. It's not mine. It's not a setting that I'm comfortable in, but I can really understand what the philosophy of engagement in the joy of life is without denying the despair. Well, the people, the followers, the court of the Rebbe of Lublin were busy at a festival singing and dancing, which was the tradition. And they looked around and they said, "Where's the Rebbe? There's no Rebbe here. What happened to the Rebbe?" And so they went and looked for him. And they came upon the Rebbe and he was lying on the ground, bruised and dirty and broken. And they looked up to his bedroom window on the second floor and it was open. Well, they comforted him, they picked him up, they carried him upstairs, they tried to make him as comfortable as possible, and of course, with the traditions of my people, the rabbi said, "Just leave me alone, I'm only a Rebbe, go dancing, go singing, go enjoy yourself, don't feel guilty, there's a celebration to be had." And with the traditions, they said, "Oi, we have so many questions. How did he come out of this window? Did he jump? Was he pushed by a robber or a rival or an agent from the government? How did he get down there?" And the rabbi said, "I don't know. It was a terrible force. I don't know what it was. But you, go dance and sing and leave me up here, because you have to get on with life." Well, if you think our talkbacks here can get kind of exciting, their talk back at Congregation Beth Or got very exciting, because people were all over the place with explanations. He did fall into despair and he jumped. Somebody pushed him out. You know how temple politics can be. Somebody in the building program and somebody else in the worship committee, and off he went. My favorite interpretation actually came from a Unitarian friend who said, "I think he was dancing and fell out the window." Now, that's borderline denial, but I liked it anyway. It's kind of looking on the bright side of falling down and getting broken. But they ended up wrestling with the same questions about Mother Teresa. And that was, how can a holy person who preaches connection and joy and song and dance. Ever feel down? What a terrible burden to put on clergy. If I thought I couldn't be depressed occasionally and sad occasionally because of my calling, I'd be really sad and depressed. That's a little Zen stuff for you. Faith is not the absence of doubt. Faithfulness is not the absence of pain or even despair. It is being engaged in that world. It is our doubts honor our faith. There's a cliche, and as with many cliches, I think it's true, that the opposite of love is not hate, it is indifference. I think the opposite of faith is not doubt or faithlessness, it's indifference. Ultimately, normal people have doubts about everything, about every important commitment and relationship, about every precept and principle. If you just say, these are my positions, I'm against this and I'm for this, and you never question it, that's not thoughtful. That's not responding to the world as it is, as the world changes and as we change. Unexamined faith, in my view, is bad faith. Examined faith is how we make ideas and principles our own as opposed to just secondhand and memorized. I think that's very, very important. Saints, however we understand that word, saints and holy people fall into despair. If we don't know that, we have not read the Bible. It's not simply Mother Teresa and the Rabbi of Lublin. It is David in the 22nd Psalm. I'm sorry, in the 22nd Psalm. It is Jesus on the cross using the same words. My Father, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? If David, if Jesus, if the Rabbi of Lublin, if Mother Teresa can feel forsaken, broken, falling into despair, it does not erase all the joy. It does not tell them, do not engage the world and just live and suffer within your despair. Despair is a place where the faithful may visit, but do not have to live. It's part of the natural cycle of our lives, of who we are, of how we are authentic within the world. Whatever our theologies, if you look at this world and it is broken and filled with pain, how can you not respond with faithful service? That's the call of that pain and brokenness. If you see the world and it is marvelous and wonderful and magical, how can you not respond with faithful service? That too is the call of the world. Our tears, our laughter, our doubts, our despair, all honor our faithful relationship with life, with the source of life, and are a result of an honest look into the complexities of our own hearts and souls. Mother Teresa, her works, she kept going with all of her pain and with all of her doubt. The Rabbi of Lublin lived to create a court and a legacy and to come back from the slough of despond. All of us ride these waves, and they are more easily ridden. The seas that we sang about in that beautiful song are more easily navigated if we understand that there are storms, if we understand that there are times when there is no wind and we are just flopping around. And if we understand that there are times when the seas are beautiful and the boat is fine. But in the course of our lives, there are rough seas. There are great swells and waves and storms. And if you want to be so detached as to be even keeled in these seas, it is an act of unhealthy denial. We can only navigate life when we start with an honest appreciation of where we will go and what those seas and swells and troughs and waves and peaks are. For we will experience them and we navigate them best through honesty and acceptance and engagement, doing not everything, but doing what we can. And I think that that's the lesson of all of those holy, faithful, doubting, despairing, and joyous people from whom we are all intellectually descended.